Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel, in mind now, and in person soon.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. All across the country, the past 2 weeks of widespread protests over the death of George Floyd while in Minneapolis police custody have prompted government and police officials to enact or propose changes aimed at showing demonstrators that their concerns about police brutality and racism are being heard. This hour, we want to focus on what's happening here in Iowa, more specifically in Linn County and in Cedar Rapids. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by the Cedar Rapids Police Chief, later in the hour, by a Cedar Rapids City Council member. But first, let's talk with two activists with the group Advocates for Social Justice in Cedar Rapids. We welcome Tamara Marcus and Amara Andrews. Tamara and Amara, are you both with us?
Yes, I'm here.
We are.
Sorry, just a correction. It's Tamara.
Tamara, forgive me, Tamara.
No worries.
Tamara and Amara. Okay. You have been protesting and also meeting with Linn County and Cedar Rapids officials. Before we get to your specific demands, tell us in your own words, and you'll have to decide which to go first. Tamara, perhaps you can go first. What is this moment about? What is, in your words, happening across the country and here in Iowa?
It's a good question. And I think for me, it's really, the moment was really about community power. And so I think what you see happening across the nation and in Cedar Rapids is communities standing up and telling their governments, their elected officials, what they want to see happen within their community. And they're demanding change.
Amara, what do you have to add to that?
Yeah, I agree. It's like finally the country is waking up and seeing the issues that Black people in particular face across the country and finally standing up and saying enough is enough, it's time for us to change. And so it's very encouraging that people, a diverse group of people, are finally accepting the call of Black Lives Matter and really pushing government and municipalities to respond to the issues that Black people face across the country.
I wonder, what are your thoughts on why the protests erupted at this moment? We've had protests primarily among African Americans in past years, going way back to 2012, 2014. We could recall all those names and have so many times in the past few days. After the deaths of so many other African Americans at the hands of police, why was it the death of George Floyd that sparked a national and even a global outrage over police practices? Amara, please go first this time.
Yeah, I think there are several factors. I think this current administration's inability to address issues that people of color face, I think, is one. So just kind of the tone of the country and sort of the tensity that the country is experiencing right now is one factor. And then I think there were just so many instances of racism in a very short period of time, with Breonna Taylor's murder, with Ahmaud's murder, and then with George Floyd. And then you also have the woman in Central Park calling the police on the gentleman who is bird watching. You know, it was all of these things happening in a matter of, you know, I think less than two weeks, really just, I think, shocked the conscience of a lot of people who weren't necessarily in support of Black Lives Matter previously.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if either of you, perhaps both of you, could share a personal story of discriminatory treatment, bad treatment by police, something that you felt, the treatment you felt was because of your skin color.
So this is Amara, and I've had numerous instances. I actually am raising. I'm African American and have two sons, and my oldest son is 18. And whenever he gets pulled over, the police always make him get out of the car. Even on the freeway, he's had to get out of the car. You know, on the other hand, if I get pulled over, I'm usually given a ticket. I've never been asked to get out of the car. So that's just a simple example of how Black men are treated differently, you know, in our society by police. And then also when I was a kid, this was obviously some time ago, I was with two African American boys and we were pulled over. We were sat on the curb. We were handcuffed. We were taken to the police station. And I was a, you know, 15-year-old private school girl. And the police took us because they said that my two friends fit the description of a rapist. So, I mean, these are simple instances that happen all of the time. And fortunately, you know, we weren't hurt. My son has not been hurt by the police, but certainly we are treated differently, and the things that happen to us don't happen to other people.
Mm-hmm. Was that, Amara, was that account you just relayed, did that happen here in Iowa?
I was raised in Los Angeles, so that was in Los Angeles when we were taken to the police station. But then the instances with my son have been here in Iowa.
Tamara, what about you and instances? Can you recall an instance for us?
Yeah, I guess mostly the ones that come to mind are the times that I've been, I guess, attacked while walking. And so when I've reported those attacks, it doesn't feel like they're being taken seriously. And there's also these questions of like, oh, what did you do to encourage that attack? And kind of almost the sort of victim blaming happening.
So, okay. To what extent, and we've heard so many really horrible tales, stories, true accounts of Black people being unfairly treated in this country, to what extent do you feel are the problems of racial discrimination in policing that we've seen time and time again in high-profile cases in the media across the country, how much are they the problems also of Iowa?
Yeah, I don't think there is a distinction. I think these issues, people of color and Black men in particular, experience the same kind of treatment across the country. I've lived here. I've lived in Illinois. I've obviously lived in California. I've lived in a number of states across the country, and the experience is the same. And and in fact, I would argue that the difference in Iowa is actually that you have fewer people of color on the police roster. So you don't have very many police of color, and they're policing, you know, African-American areas, and they don't have the experience and have never really encountered African-American people besides in their work situation. That's an issue that I have faced in Iowa in sort of all aspects of living, is this sort of ignorance, just because there has been so few interactions with people of color.
Right.
You know, when I moved here, I was the only African American in my company. I can go days without seeing other African-American people. They're just there aren't a lot of people of color here for white people to have experienced sort of the diversity of what our lives are like, if that makes sense.
Yes, it certainly does. And having lived in Los Angeles, and I believe that was Amara that you were speaking just now, having the makeup of Los Angeles compared to Iowa, 90% plus white And also about 5%, if that, African-American here in Iowa. So that's quite a difference. Before we go to our police chief of Cedar Rapids, I wanted to ask about, I think you were encouraged. You used some wording that you said you were encouraged about the reaction here in these protests. Tell us about the makeup of your fellow protesters. The numbers, of course, have made news for the past 2 weeks. But these are not just African Americans, are they, Tamara?
No, they're not. I think the people who've shown up are really diverse, and I think that speaks to the strength of the movement. And so I think you asked the question earlier about, you know, why now? And I think part of that is because though it is not a diverse community, Cedar Rapids is starting to realize that these issues, you know, are actually affecting fellow community members. And so it's been really inspiring to see people stand up and really start to become these imperfect allies and support the cause.
Okay. I know you have 7 demands to share, but first let's welcome to our program the Cedar Rapids Chief of Police, Wayne German. Chief of Police German, welcome back to our program.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay. Now I'd like to, while you're on the air here, I'd like to have Tamara, Amara, whichever one of you, please just list the demands. We'll hopefully have some time to talk about them in a bit more detail. But Amara, could you list those demands of the activists?
Sure. So as you mentioned, we have 7, and I'll just kind of go over the high level. The first is that we would like to see a citizens review board put together to review police conduct, specifically the use of force patterns and practices. The second is a significant investment in diversity, equity, and inclusion of the police force, both in training and recruiting. The third, ban the use of chokeholds, knee to neck maneuvers, and strengthen existing use of force standards. Fourth, decriminalize minor marijuana crimes and other low-level offenses. 5, impose strict body camera provisions to ensure that body cams are used and not turned off. 6, make negotiations between the municipal authorities and bargaining units that represent police officers public. And 7th is to work on abolishing qualified immunity.
Mm-hmm. Qualified immunity, this is a doctrine that shields government officials from being held personally liable for discretionary action performed in their official capacity to some extent. Chief of Police German, before you respond to any of those individual demands, I understand you spoke at a march last weekend in Cedar Rapids. Broadly speaking, could you tell us the message you had for the demonstrators?
Well, I had a number of messages, you know, with the biggest one being that, you know, me as a person, me as a police officer and the chief and leader of the Cedar Rapids Police Department, I was sickened by the act of murder against Mr. Floyd. I wanted that to be clear. And I also wanted to be clear that there does need to be change. I have heard it that and that I am open to engage in dialogue and conversation for the change. I think the change is necessary to promote healing between the communities of color, and all segments of the community and law enforcement and the police department. And if I can you know, participate and contribute, I think that's, you know, part of my responsibility to do that. I also wanted the message to be clear that, you know, as a result of the change and the healing is that we want to continue to build trusting relationships and, you know, the trust that we have with our community we need to build relationships that currently exist. We need to establish relationships that, you know, haven't been created. And, you know, we need to build it to a level that it will be significant. One incident that tarnishes the badge, or a incident where it has an effect on that trust, it is nearly impossible to regain that trust once you lose it. So that's why it's so important to you know, establish trust and to be willing to engage in the conversations, you know, to better ourselves as a profession and as an agency. And so because of, you know, what we heard, we went ahead and took our use of force policy. And even though in a one of our other policies regarding the code of conduct that, you know, requires officers to take action when they either witness a crime being committed, we wanted to be more specific. We included in our use of force policy the duty to intervene, so that if an officer witnessed, you know, an excessive use of force, that they have the duty to intervene. So that's just one of the areas that we're strengthening. We're going through the other areas of our directives and policies to see what we can do in terms of the demands that have been brought forth.
I wanted to ask you the same question that I asked our two advocates for social justice in Cedar Rapids. We've seen so many high-profile cases, and hopefully everyone was sickened by that video of the killing of George Floyd. But the question here remains, and our two advocates say it's in every state, and so have been the protests. Chief of Police German, what are the problems here in Iowa? Does the problem of racial discrimination in policing that we've seen time again in the high-profile cases across the country also exist here in Iowa?
Well, I think I would be... yeah, they do exist because they're being brought to our attention. So, you know, I think it's more of, you know, perception is reality. You know, I want to remain open to receive information on any acts of racism. You know, racism cannot be tolerated anywhere. Discrimination cannot be tolerated. And that's why we're taking everything seriously.
Yeah. Why has it taken so long? I mean, we've been talking about this in previous years, and there have been actions sensitize police to implicit bias training, for instance. Why has the problem remained despite the best intentions and training of chiefs of police such as yourself?
Sir, I don't have an answer for that. If I did, I would have promoted it long ago. I can tell you that, you know, I believe that we are a very progressive agency. When you mentioned implicit bias, when that topic became available years ago as a concern to be addressed by law enforcement, the Cedar Rapids Police Department grabbed onto it, and we've been providing implicit bias training for more than 4 years now, and the state just adopted and mandated it in its academy curriculum. So, you know, I don't have an answer as to why it has taken so long, but yeah, again, I think the problem does exist, and we are being very upfront and open that we need to fix this. Again, it cannot continue to exist, and if we don't fix it, this problem will just get worse.
Tamara and Amara, I believe your advocacy group has had meetings with the mayor of Cedar Rapids, Brad Hart, also council members, perhaps the chief of police as well. How are you feeling about these meetings and how your seven demands, which you listed a few minutes ago, are being received?
So this is Amara. We have met with the chief of police and the mayor and with some council members. We've only met once. We meet again tomorrow. We've been able to go through a couple of our demands, not all of them yet, but I do feel very encouraged, especially by the chief. His willingness to work with us keeps us optimistic that we will see change.
Mm-hmm. And that was Amara. Tamara, your view on how this is progressing?
I would echo those sentiments and also add that, you know, I'm hoping that for my hopes for tomorrow is that we can move through more of these demands and then also work to establish kind of a timeline as well as a consistent schedule to keep these meetings going, because I do think that there's a lot of work to do and it's still a relatively new space for all of us. And so getting on a consistent schedule, I think, might help further these negotiations.
We have to take a break in just over a minute, but I wanted to ask you, and we'll have the chief of police joining us as well as the both of you in our second half hour. How should these seven demands be seen? As hard and fast demands that must, in any case, be met? Or are they a start for negotiations, for conversations such as the ones that you've already started? Amara, how do you see that?
I guess I would say both of those things are true. So we chose the seven because we think that they are achievable. You know, and even in our conversations the other day, some things the police department is already doing. So it's just a matter of beefing up a policy or, you know, ensuring that there's some sort of accountability. So a lot of what we are asking is already happening. We just need more accountability and maybe more of, for example, diversity training, right? Implicit mm-hmm. bias okay. training, apparently. I think now the police department, they have 1 hour a year. So we'd like to see more of that. So I think they're all achievable. It's a starting point, but the hope is that we can really make some strides towards all seven.
Okay, we'll come back. Two African Americans living here in Iowa, activists with Advocates for Social Justice in Cedar Rapids. Also, we're so pleased to have the Cedar Rapids Police Chief with us, Wayne German. When we come back, we'll be joined by a Cedar Rapids City Council member as we discuss what's being done here in Iowa after all of these protests nationwide. What's happening? We'll talk about it continuing after this break.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
On this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. How are concerns about police brutality and racism being addressed here in Iowa? That's what we're looking at this hour on River to River, racial justice. Today, focusing specifically on Linn County and Cedar Rapids, we're hearing from two activists, Tamara Marcus and Amara Andrews. They are with Advocates for Social Justice in Cedar Rapids. Also, we have the Cedar Rapids Police Chief, Wayne German, with us as well. New to this half hour, Dale Todd is a council member for the City of Cedar Rapids and chair of the Public Safety Committee. Dale Todd, welcome to our program. We want to point out this is radio. You are also African-American?
Yeah, you are exactly right.
Very good.
Grew up on the south side of Chicago and got here in 74 to go to Coe College.
Okay, very good. Dale Todd, welcome to our program. We heard in this last half hour, and I hope you were listening to that conversation, let's go through the demands from our activists here. I'll go through them quickly, seven of them. form an independent citizens review board, 2, make significant investments in diversity, equity, and inclusion, 3, ban chokeholds, knee-to-neck maneuvers, and strengthen the use of force standards, decriminalize minor marijuana crimes and low-level offenses. That was 4. 5, impose strict body camera provisions. 6, make negotiations between law enforcement and municipal representatives public. And 7, abolish qualified immunity. Dale Todd, tell us a little bit about how you see this list, where you see perhaps the low-hanging fruit that most everyone can agree on, be they in government or police or African-Americans here in Iowa.
Well, Ben, first off, thank you for the opportunity. Really fascinating conversation earlier. I would start with this. You know, we all saw the murder of George Floyd, and nobody wants to see anything like that ever happen again to anybody. And so that has helped us put some focus on why we're here today. You asked a question earlier, though, about why progress hasn't been made. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the, at least in my eyes, is that sometimes we haven't been focused. And so this list of demands really helps narrow down some of these are achievable goals. And I would say in terms of the city of Cedar Rapids and our council, we think the majority of them are achievable. There's some that we need to do a little bit more research on. But at the end of the day, you don't want a department where people use chokeholds. You don't want a department where your officers, when times happen and there's an event and you find out that their body camera was not on. And so we're working hard every day to try to make sure that we do the best we can. And I think we all know that everybody can do better. And this list has really helped, shine a light on some of the practices and open the door to a discussion that is long overdue. And so we look forward to it, and we're thankful for it.
Mm-hmm. Cedar Rapids Police Chief Wayne German, are you open to everything on this list? Let me put it this way. What is the most problematic demand on the list from your perspective as a police chief?
In terms of problematic, there's the qualified immunity. I know I don't have any control, and I know the demand is about advocating for it, and I just don't know enough to be able to take a position on exactly what type of progress we could make on that demand. But you mentioned earlier, we've already have some policies regarding the use of force and the body camera, and so that's not going to be tough to achieve at all. And then the bit about the marijuana, again, that should be a legislative be taken up in the legislature in Des Moines.
Right.
And the other about the negotiations with law enforcement and municipal representatives. I'm not even at the table when those negotiations are occurring. And I know because of my position, I'm finding the contract here being is very easy for me to manage. I would ask what is a problem? Is there a problem or a perceived problem with the Cedar Rapids contract? Because if there is, I'd like to know and maybe help solve whatever problem there is.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Todd, do you see problems with the contract? This is a contract. Perhaps you could explain that a bit.
You know, it's a contract. you know, and we, you know, we've got unions in place for reasons, but you know, the question is, what is the goal? Is the goal to be more transparent with the process? You know, we're more than open to that. Is the goal to make sure that there's not protections in there for bad cops? We don't want to protect bad cops. And so, you know, that's an area where we have to, you know, talk to our HR people, talk to the city attorneys. But at the end of the day, I think all these groups agree on, you know, we all agree on the same outcome. We
right.
want to be but the best we can.
You mentioned unions. Dale Todd, let me jump in there, because we've heard numerous reports in the past few days talking about how police unions often stand in the way of disciplining or getting rid of bad police officers. I want to ask, of course, the chief of police there, but how do you see that, Councilmember Todd?
It's real simple. If somebody has violated the code of conduct and or departmental rules and departmental trainings, the city's not going to protect them. And we will, you know, we've had situations before, and I have confidence in the chief that in those situations like that, he's going to do what's right. And so at the end of the day, Ben, I hope I'm not trying to be evasive with your question. These are things that we have to work out. And I mean, the point is, again, nobody wants to protect bad cops in this city. And we'll do what we can to get rid of them with the appropriate facts.
Mm-hmm.
If I can add on to that, and
of course,
I'm not seeing any occurrence that has happened here in Iowa. I definitely know it has not happened in Cedar Rapids, especially during my tenure. But I do know, and it is, you know, sad that in other areas in the country where a bad cop has been dismissed at, you know, the order of the chief, that either a union or an arbitrator or some other, position has overturned the chief's order and has, reappointed that officer who, again, was basically terminated by the chief. Nobody dislikes a bad cop more than a good cop. So I am 100% in support of doing whatever we can to, again, make sure that bad cops are not retained on police departments.
If you just joined
one
us.
One of the great ideas is the national database of bad cops. Sometimes a department can get rid of a bad cop, and next thing you know, he's in the next jurisdiction. And so that should not be the case. We would support something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. So many aspects here. So that person's background, be it good or bad, travels with them should they change to a different force in Iowa or in another part of the country. Seems like a really good suggestion there. Let's get to Tamara and Amara back into this conversation. Of course, you've been there the whole time. We focused on you mainly in the first half hour. What do you think of the discussion that we're having right now about this list of your list of demands and others have been thrown in there? It seems like a fruitful conversation with a lot of goodwill at present, at hand, for making progress here.
Yeah, it's definitely inspiring to hear some of these sentiments being shared. And, you know, at this point, I look forward to tomorrow's meeting and to going through the rest of the list and seeing, you know, working with both the chief and Councilmember Todd to identify, you know, some of the challenges in getting these demands met and then figuring out how we can address them.
Right. Amara, let me ask you about the one point that I think the chief mentioned there a moment ago. Perhaps it was the council member, but this point seven, abolish qualified immunity. Now, this shields government officials from being held personally liable for discretionary actions performed in their official capacity. Talk about that demand in your, you say abolish, that means get rid of it. But we know police officers, no matter what their skin color, have to make split-second decisions Is there no qualified, limited immunity for what decisions that people make in the heat of a moment with the best intentions there? Shouldn't they be shielded in some way?
Well, I think historically they have been shielded, and they have been given the benefit of the doubt. And what we're just asking for is that when there is gross misconduct, that there are consequences. And I realize that the qualified immunity is a state and federal issue, but we are hoping that the chief will help us to lobby state and federal officials to work on this issue.
Police chief, yeah, go ahead.
I am very, very committed to working again to remove bad cops from police departments. And I think part of that is to put in a process for, you know, quality, very high quality investigations, so that the qualified immunity wouldn't even apply. That it is so, the investigation reveals, you know, without a doubt, that someone acted outside the scope of his authority, his or her authority, and outside of good faith. And so, you know, I'd like to explore ways that we can increase the quality of these types of investigations.
Mm-hmm. Dale Todd, let me ask you this. As an African-American living here in Iowa, also a council member for the city of Cedar Rapids and chair of the Public Safety Committee, members of Congress of both parties working on legislation to address police misconduct this week. We've heard Democrats introducing this week sweeping police misconduct reform, a bill there. Republicans in the Senate working on their own legislation. How much, Dale Todd, are reforms at county, community levels connected with whatever happens at a federal level? Do you have your eyes on what Congress is doing?
There is a real direct correlation between what happens on a federal level and what happens on a local level. But more importantly than anything, it is what a lot of times people become disenfranchised with federal government and their inability to get things done. That's the beauty of local democracy here in Iowa, and with your elected officials here who can, I mean, politics is local, and the ability to make things in city government happen are real things that we take pride in. And this is one of those rare opportunities where by building the right coalitions and really talking about change in the right way, we have a unique, historic opportunity to change the paradigm, not just on issues of police reform, but issues of housing and homelessness and poverty and joblessness. And, you know, the marijuana conviction, you know, a kid gets in trouble for one minor infraction, and it haunts him in terms of his inability to get a job or to get housing. Those are the kind of things that we need to correct. And by working with these organizations and putting the spotlight on these issues, the goal would be we can make some sweeping reforms that would be historic. And so this is, you know, we'll talk to our federal legislators and we'll try to be in sync. But what happens here is locally. And we want to make sure that by the end of the day, we do this right, and we have a product that we can all be proud of.
Mm-hmm. Dale Todd, how do you view Donald Trump's role, our president's role in this national debate over police misconduct and racial discrimination so far?
Somebody spoke earlier about, Amara spoke earlier about why this issue is front and center now. My historic context is this coalition that is coming together now came together the last time when we elected Barack Obama. Once Barack got in office, we got lazy. But the day he got in office, people started working against him and fermenting the tide of hate and racism and bigotry that had been fermenting since the civil rights movement. And Donald Trump knows what he's doing specifically. He is trying to divide people and use fear and hate and talk about how these protesters are they're rioters. I have to give a shout out to the protesters in Cedar Rapids and to the police department at the same time. We have not had the problems that other communities have had because we're working together in a bipartisan way to help facilitate these peaceful demonstrations. And so President Trump, it's sad. He could be bringing people together on this issue. But my goal is, I believe he's trying to create division and fear, and that will be enough to help him win the election. I hope that's not the case.
Mm. Let's talk about the election. Perhaps Tamara or Amara, you can tell us, how much do you think race relations, this discrimination issue, will figure into this year's general election? Amara?
This is Amara. I hope that it is a factor. I think people are paying attention right now and understand. I think it's obvious Trump's stance. I'm hoping, I know the people of color are excited and motivated to vote in November. So I hope that it's a deciding factor.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is Juneteenth. This is the day that commemorates the day that the last slaves were freed on June 19th, 1865 in the United States. Council member Todd, as an African-American and elected officials, how do you hope this Juneteenth will be celebrated differently?
Well, this issue is brought to the forefront. One reality is that Trump wouldn't be in office if we had all voted, and we didn't. And one of the frustrating things for me is that when presidential campaigns come to Iowa, quite often they forget about the issues that are important to us in these urban cities. And so it's just a repurposing and framing of the dialogue and the reminder to people that don't just vote, but know about what you're voting about. And let your friends and your family and those folks know these are Ben, I feel very strongly, having been somebody that grew up in the 60s, that these times today are more divisive than they've ever been. And that is being done purposefully by people to drive a wedge through this country so that they can benefit. And so that's the talk I'm going to give. I'm so proud of these young folks that are, who are pushing people to make change. This is healthy, and this is well and long overdue.
Mm-hmm. Chief of Police of Cedar Rapids, Wayne German, we don't have much time, just a few seconds. Your voice has been so important in this conversation this hour. What words do you want to leave us with forward-looking?
I would echo Councilman Todd's comments. The protests that we have had here in Cedar Rapids have been very peaceful. I attribute it for, a couple of reasons. I think the relationship that the men and women of the Cedar Rapids Police Department have with members of our community is strong, but I want to make it stronger. But I'd also like to compliment the organizers and the people that put on these events, because they stressed several times last Saturday. I couldn't count the number of times they emphasized that we're here to peacefully exercise our constitutional rights. And I think that's a huge statement. So I appreciate that, and I know I've spoken with a lot of people who made those same observations. So I'm again looking forward to continue to work and make progress and affect positive change.
Okay, we've run out of time. Cedar Rapids Chief of Police Wayne German, Dale Todd, Cedar Rapids City Council member and activists with Advocates for Social Justice in Cedar Rapids, Amara Andrews and Tamara Marcus. Thank you all for a really interesting important discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the time.
Bye, guys.
River to River is produced by Matt Alvarez, Caitlin Harrop, and Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, it's a News Buzz edition of our... Yes, it's the end of the week. Wow, already here. Time flies when there is so much news. I'm Ben Kiefer. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for our News Buzz edition.